Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen these titles. We have Spoilers Ho! I am your host, Jethel Silverwing.
And I'm Tok.
Now this week we're going to try something a little bit different. So Tok, tell me, what have you been watching this week?
Mostly Netflix and YouTube, but in particular I've been watching MASH from beginning to end.
Oh.
It's a big favorite of mine from when I was younger. I've never seen the whole thing. So I'm into season 7 now, and I'm laughing my butt off the whole way through. It really holds up well. As far as horror goes, I just finished watching an excellent horror anime that I can recommend on Crunchyroll.com. It's called Parasite the Maxim. It's Parasite with a Y instead of an I.
I have not heard that one.
It's about these amorphous creatures that arrive on Earth somehow, and they start merging with and replacing the heads of hundreds of humans.
Mm-hmm.
And they walk around amongst mankind, occasionally trapping one unawares and consuming them in horrific fashion.
Okay, they're parasites, but they're replacing the head?
Yeah, so they walk around on they take the form of a human head, and they control a now-deceased human's body.
I gotcha. Okay, I was just thinking, wait a minute, wouldn't you see that? Hey, Bob, how you doing? Is that a new haircut? Oh, my God!
Well, yeah, when they reveal themselves, they start whipping out all the claws and the teeth.
Ooh.
And, you know, they start going all the thing on you.
I may have to check that one out.
It's very, very good. The protagonist is a human whose parasite wasn't able to take over his head and instead replaces everything from above his right elbow down to his hand.
Hmm.
And they become unlikely friends, and adventures ensue. It's bloody stuff, though, not for the squeamish. So word of warning, not for kids. Definitely not. But it's well worth checking out. It's Parasite with a Y instead of an I,
Parasite.
The Maxim, on Crunchyroll.com. It's in Japanese with subtitles, like most of the stuff on Crunchyroll.
All right. I'll have to check that one out sometime.
There's 24 episodes of a single season up there right now. So what have you been watching lately?
Oh God, I've been browsing my typical bad horror. Let's see, continuing with my bad horror, you know, I've been browsing through Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to say, Walmart has got to put something in their store where you can actually get an internet connection around the movie section. Because I bought one that was just, oh my God, what the hell did I just buy? It was called the Amityville Theater.
I saw you posted a review for that.
Oh, my God, was this movie bad. Well, we'll have to talk about it. No matter of fact, I'm not going to make you endure watching this.
Wow.
That's how bad this movie is. Oh, my God.
You love bad movies.
I love bad movies. But this one was just like, you know, the tagline was inspired by the actual events from America's most notorious town.
Uh-huh.
No, it wasn't inspired by the Amityville. There was nothing about the Amityville horror in it.
So ghosts. Did they have ghosts?
It was, oh God, it was just, this girl inherits a theater from her parents and it's haunted. That's pretty much it. She goes in there with her friends and there's just, why is everyone angry? Everyone is so badly acting and they're all angry. Why?
No idea. Maybe the director thought that that's how you put tension into a movie, was to make everyone...
It's like no one has any emotion except anger.
Maybe they were all, they had all just quit drinking coffee for their health.
I don't know. And they quit smoking.
Oh, yeah, that would do it.
Maybe the director
was a huge health nut, and he was like, okay, everybody, no smokes on set at all.
God. And they go in there and they find this punk goth girl has been living there and she's mad at them for interrupting her living space. They own the fucking place. Get out. Anyway, Amityville Playhouse / Amityville Theater. It was released under two names for some fucking reason. Very bad movie. Don't bother. Other than that, I've just been continuing with my, horror movie watching. Of course, you can see all my reviews at cinemaunrest.com. Let's see. TV-wise, I always watch wrestling every week. WWE, that is. I couldn't care less about TNA. They suck. This week, we're taking a look at the 1983 supernatural fantasy, Something Wicked This Way Comes.
I love that title so much. It just rolls off the tongue.
It does. starring Jason Robards, Jonathan Pryce, and Vidal Peterson. Alternative title! Lightning Rods and Lonely Broads.
I could not come up with an alternative title for this one. Oh, I love it too much. The title's too good. I can't make fun of this movie. It's part of my childhood, big time.
All right. So, Something Wicked This Way Comes. Creepy Carnival shows up in a small town, and what I'm assuming is being portrayed as the 40s or 50s?
1930s.
30s, all right.
Yeah, it's based on a Ray Bradbury novel, and he was talking about his own childhood, which was the 1930s. Oh. And this is understood to be, you know, American Midwest. You know, it was filmed in Vermont. Very, very yes. beautiful scenery. To me, it's, you know, a Christmas story. You know, you'll shoot your eye out. You know, that whole nostalgia, yeah. but for Halloween. That's how important.
Or they'll just take your eye out.
Yes. Your eyes and your youth and your soul and everything else. And a surprisingly scary film for a Disney flick, isn't it?
Well, this is back when Disney was making movies that were trying to appeal to everyone and not just kids.
Mm-hmm. More mature theme, because they saw the right. success of Dark Crystal and mm-hmm. other films, Time Bandits, and they were like,
Yeah, back then, it was the cartoons were for kids, and their live-action movies were more for, say, 20 to 30-year-olds, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, they're just trying to appeal to tweens.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But yeah, this is back when Disney actually made somewhat serious movies.
And this was the last film to be produced under the Walt Disney Productions label, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So was this their last shot at it? You know, did they figure, okay, this is obviously what we're good at since it bombed?
I think it was more of a renaming where they got rid of Walt Disney and just went with Disney.
This movie made less than half of its budget back. Well, at the domestic box office, which is sad because when I saw this movie as a kid, I loved it. And I still love it. It should have been so much more successful than it was.
I want to clarify why I put Vidal Peterson in with the starring instead of going with the top three, which included Diane Ladd. Because Diane Ladd is barely in this thing.
Yeah.
She maybe has one or two scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Very little dialogue, so I just decided to, Jason Robards, Jonathan Pryce, and Vidal Peterson, who played Will, the boy.
I would include Sean Carson in top billing also as Will's friend Jim Nightshade, because
he
was there every minute Will was there, so. I love the casting for this movie.
Oh yeah,
so much.
Everybody did a great job.
And they really lucked out with Jonathan Pryce. I think Jonathan Pryce really lent a lot of class to this. He was a relatively unknown actor at the time, but I can't imagine anybody else playing Mr. Dark, even though the director's first choices for Mr. Dark were Peter O'Toole and Christopher Lee.
But Lee, I think, would have done a good job.
Yeah, possibly. But now that we've seen Jonathan Pryce, I mean, that voice, that accent, and his subtle, threatening...
And for people who may not know the name Jonathan Pryce, he is currently in Game of Thrones as the Head Sparrow.
Jonathan Pryce has been in a lot of Brazil.
Mm-hmm. He was the head guy in Brazil. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. The governor in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, yes.
Yes, that was a great part. So one thing that really appeals to me about Something Wicked This Way Comes is I always love a movie where... there's something evil and supernatural going on, and the kids are worried about who the heck can we tell? No one's going to believe us. We're just kids. And then there's always that one adult that listens to them and believes them. And I loved that feeling as a kid of having somebody in a position of authority take the children in the movie seriously. That always really appealed to me as a kid.
And that is a running theme in a lot of... kids movies, not so much today, but back in the 80s and 90s and even into the 70s, it's, you're a kid, why should we believe you over the adult? Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is to appeal to the kid.
Or teenagers. Right. The Nightmare on Elm Street movies played on that that dynamic a lot. You know, these things are happening in our nightmares. No, they're not. Nightmares aren't real. Blah, blah, blah. And then people start dying.
Right.
But I loved that.
The disbelief of the child's story, even though everything around you tells you they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. I love that, and usually the adults only come to realize that something's really actually happening, you know, near the end of the movie. And that's the climax of the movie. But here, the father really decides, you know, okay, something's really going on here. I believe my son. So I'm going to take him seriously. And lo and behold, he finds evidence in his own father's journals.
Mm-hmm.
About this carnival having come again.
I was trying to find it without rewatching the movie.
Uh-huh.
What is the recycle time on this? They come like what, every 20 years, something like that?
It doesn't really say, just that they've been there before.
Okay, so they've been there before, it's in the town's history. Why do they keep going to the carnival when they know it's evil?
But they don't. You know, they just had suspicions. Everyone's been fooled. Anybody that found out was done away with. And then they went off to another town before they raised too much suspicion.
They come back so far back in years that everyone's forgotten. Oh, it's just a myth. Yeah.
Or the people that knew something have passed on, you know, and their children or their children's children are there now.
Oh, but, Uncle Joey was just weird. There was nothing evil about that carnival. Look, they have cotton candy. How can they be evil with cotton candy?
I know, right? What's wrong with corn dogs, too, probably?
Exactly. The fact that they're selling them out of the back of a beat-up white van with free candy printed across the side has nothing to do with anything!
I love the ambiguous nature of these bad guys, these devils, what are they? You know, the only description really given is in, Pam Grier's in this, surprisingly, that surprised me. She plays the part of the Dust Witch. She's listed in the credits.
The Dust Witch.
So these are, you know, these are witches, apparently. Humans, but...
I took it as... Jonathan Pryce's character, Mr. Dark, is the devil. Or at least...
Or a devil.
Or a devil type thing. And yeah. Everyone else is pretty much their henchmen. It seems to me that if you weren't a primary member of his little inner circle, you were pretty much someone who was taken from a town.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, so they're basically henchmen, but...
More than a couple of them are probably... Because he always refers to we feed and we hunger for this, their pain, their misery, they're sweet to us, you know. So I think, you know, maybe he's talking about just him and the witch, you know. Maybe they work as a pair overseeing the entire.
Are there more than one carnival?
Maybe, yeah.
That is possible.
More than one group of autumn people. That's possible, too. But I definitely think the witch is on the same level with Mr. Dark. She's definitely not just some regular
right
person that was enticed in.
His right-hand witch.
Yeah.
Take care of him for me. Doesn't want to get his hands dirty.
I gotta tell you, the scene where she manifests, you know, seemingly manifests, you know, hundreds of spiders, into Jim Nightshade's bedroom, really stuck with me.
By the way, arachnophobics, those are real spiders!
Oh my goodness.
There were a couple of dozen mechanical spiders, but there were over 250 real tarantulas crawling around that room.
Defanged, I'm sure, but still.
I hope so.
Those kids must have been so, that must have been like the first question, you know, on the casting couch. So, are you afraid of spiders? Is that something you see yourself getting over anytime soon?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I love that the spiders, you know, I love that the, you know, they didn't cheap out on that. You know, the spiders, so many of them were real and you could see that they were real live spiders and that the boys actually stepped on some of them, you know, and that was the stuff of nightmares. I remember having nightmares about that and I loved it though. I loved that scene and I Oh man, there was just something about that. I had never seen, this was one of the very first, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, there's no, like, you know, gore and blood and guts. Well, actually, there's a tiny little bit of gore, and there's definitely some blood, but it's not, like, gratuitous and sprayed around, you know, it's,
right.
It's subtle horror. It's subtle horror, but there's still horror there, and it's definitely one of the very first truly frightening movies I ever saw in the theater. It really started, you know,
not
appreciation for horror.
Definitely not something today's audience would expect from Disney.
Definitely not. And probably a bit tame for people who would watch, you know, as
tame
a scary
by today's
TV.
Standards.
Yeah, definitely, oh, definitely. Yeah.
So let's talk about one glaring thing in the entire movie.
All right.
How long has that cigarette lighter been burning?
The lamp?
Every time we went by that cigar shop, that little finger with the flame coming out of it was constantly lit. How many years have they been running that? And is it evil itself? Flames of evil and greed.
It's just an oil lamp, I imagine.
I know,
that they would just keep lit for people to.
I'm just pointing out stuff.
I'm curious about the other novel. I bought the novel, by the way. I didn't have time to read it yet, but I'm really curious to read Ray Bradbury's original novel for this. And there is another novel about Greentown, Illinois that he wrote as well. And I'm interested in that one too, to see if it has any connections with this. Or if it's just, a completely ordinary story, you know, so. That's interesting. I had no idea that there were two Greentown novels.
Hmm. There you go.
I like so many things about this movie. I like that they present that dichotomy between Jim and Will. How Will, you know, just wants to be happy and carefree and live out his childhood. But Jim is so intent on being grown up. Within the first couple of minutes of the movie, he's like, I'm 2 minutes older than you. I was born, you know, just a couple of minutes before midnight. And you were born after midnight by a minute. And so I'm your elder, you know.
He
flaunts this and holds it over Will's head. And he insists on peeking into the belly dancer tent to try to get an eyeful. You know, he desperately wants to be older.
Well,
that's kind of a subtle theme. His weakness.
I think what they were going for there is Jim doesn't have a father, therefore somehow he's more morally corruptible. Like when I was growing up in the 70s, you always had that one friend that had the big pile of Playboys or Hustlers that he found in his dad's closet or something. That's Jim Nightshade.
I was Jim Nightshade then.
Well, yeah, I found my dad's stash quite...
Oh, yeah, same here.
Down in the basement, of course, but that's Jim. And Will is supposed to be, oh, I have a father, I have morals.
I suppose. I just think that they presented that aspect of Jim because that's supposed to be his weakness. That's supposed to be what Mr. Dark's going to tempt him with. Do you want to feel important? Do you want to feel powerful? Do you want to feel, you know, like a grown man, you know?
Be my partner. It'll be Dark and Nightshade, which is actually an awesome name.
Yes, that would be. That would be. And I like that line that he says in the library, to know what grown-ups do behind locked doors when the children have gone to bed. You know, they flat out refer to sex in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty blatant about it for a Disney film.
Come, young Nightshade, I'll get you laid.
Pretty much.
Young
That's
Nightshade,
pretty much
what he's saying. Who was like 12.
But in the book, they're 14, I understand. Yeah, they're a little bit older, but I think in the movie they decided to go a little bit younger to appeal to a younger audience.
There was actually one scene that they had to film like a year later,
mm-hmm.
and the boys were noticeably older.
Was it the spider scene?
Yes, it was. It was a spider
scene. I thought so, because
like,
when...
They don't look right.
when they wake up, because I know Disney did some reshoots to try to get things, you know, a little bit more in line with what they wanted. And I noticed that watching it this morning, just before we started recording, they didn't look right. You know, mm-hmm. I just thought, okay, they're sweaty, I guess, just waking up from this nightmare.
I think Will, the character Will is actually wearing a wig because his hair was different.
It was taller, but I just kind of passed it off as, okay, maybe his hair's just messed up. Cause he did have to, right? Because originally, the boy who plays Will was auditioning for Jim, and Jim was and Sean Carson, the boy who plays Jim, was auditioning for Will. And the director decided, you know what, you two guys, you really should flip-flop roles because you're really perfect. We just need to dye your hair. So they dyed Vidal's hair blonde and dyed Sean's hair dark.
But yeah, they're noticeably older and the glasses don't fit right.
Yeah.
Will's glasses all of a sudden are bigger.
They're bigger because they have to be bigger because his head is bigger. So they had to remake them, right?
Right, because throughout the rest of the movie, his glasses look a little small for him, to be honest. But yeah. I guess he grew so much that he couldn't put those glasses on anymore.
I knew something was off, but I couldn't quite, you know.
Apparently something wicked went through an initial, limited run. And they're like, oh, wait, no.
Test audiences or something.
Yeah, and they're like, no, we need to redo this scene. It was like a year or so later. So, yeah, that's what happened there.
And they replaced the film score, too. The original score was too dark, so they got James Horner to do a score for it. Hmm. I'm interested to hear the original score now. I was like, how?
You probably will never find it.
Yeah. And I would love to see some of the stuff that was cut out. There was supposed to be this really fantastic first of its kind, state-of-the-art CGI animated scene where saw the carnival coming together off the train.
Yep, it was going to be the forest was actually going to start creating the carnival. And yeah. it was going to be the first CGI in a feature-length movie ever.
And they made it.
They made it, and the...
And they just discarded it.
The director thought it looked too corny. Of course, this is really early CGI. We know how bad that stuff was. But yeah, this was very early computer animation. They didn't like how it came out. But yeah, it was going to be a historic first ever CGI film.
Well, it wasn't the director's choice, actually. It was Disney. When they spent another $5 million on refilming, re-editing, and rescoring the picture, they just scrapped Clayton's original opening scene and decided it was too wonky looking, I guess. Or maybe they were trimming the movie for time and they decided it needed to go. So that's unfortunate, that all these things happened, but I get the feeling sometimes that it could have been a great movie. There is that neat effect with the stone angels, though, with the red light coming out of them. It sort of presents the idea that something evil is passing by, and the holy ground is reacting badly to this evil presence rolling by. Because they have to scamper through a graveyard to get to where they are by the tracks. And there is one tiny little piece of the original CGI sequence left in. As you pan back from the opening shot of the setup carnival with the Ferris wheel and the lights, and the lightning flashes and briefly shows, the entrance arch with all the advertisements on it. Somehow that effect of the lightning hitting it is left over from the setup. It's kind of rotoscoped in or something.
Right.
Looks a little, they could have done that with practical lighting. Why does it look like a special effect? I mean, that's why it's left over. But I love that sequence. I kind of like it better. That it just kind of happens off camera. The train rolls by and then boom, there's a carnival there.
Yep.
It
works in its own way. The animated sequence would have been more dramatic.
If the boys themselves don't see it and we're experiencing the story through their eyes, then what would be the point of showing it if they don't see it?
Exactly.
Because they ask the question, how is this possible? How could it already be set up? So they obviously didn't see it happen.
Right. And I respect the Disney producer's idea of cutting that animated scene because, I'd rather see no CGI than bad CGI any day.
Yeah. Sometimes you really have to what do they call it? Kill your darlings.
Yeah.
When something, no matter how attached you are to it, if something just isn't working, snip, it's got to go when it comes to a movie like this.
There's a lot to say about Something Wicked This Way Comes. It is a good movie. I enjoyed it greatly. I want everyone to watch it. Go watch this.
Definitely. Bradbury himself referred to the film's final cut that we've seen on DVD. it was not a great film, but a decently nice one. And I agree with that assessment. What's your favorite moment in the entire film?
Oh God, do I have a favorite in the moment? I can tell you what my least favorite moment was. Could they find a better hiding spot than just on top of some books?
I guess. Like,
they're supposed to be hiding from the devil.
Yeah, I don't get that. They run in opposite directions. They run in opposite directions to opposite sides of the library, and they both end up in bookcases right next to each other. I love all the scenes where Will's father and Mr. Dark trade jabs, where they quote passages at each other. They use Will's father's like, you know, by the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. And then they just kind of trade literary quotes back and forth, sparring like that. I love that. And I love that scene where Jonathan Pryce is trying to tempt Will's father with youth, ripping the pages out of his father's journal, saying, oh, you know, 30? No? Gone. 31? Gone. 32? You sure you don't want this? Because you're losing years fast here, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. And my absolute favorite moment in the entire movie is when they're standing by that cigar lighting oil lamp you love so much. Mr. Dark, obviously knows that Will's father knows where the kids are. And he's so furious that he's refusing to give in to the temptation, you know, to the demand to reveal the whereabouts of the boys to him. And there's this implied threat as he walks back to the parade. And instead of the cheerful, bouncy music resuming, they start with a funeral march, with a funeral dirge.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of stares at Will's father as he slowly walks along, saying, fine, you want it that way? We'll play it that way, old man. That moment in the movie is so tense and wonderful. You know what confuses me? Who is the lightning rod guy? You know, is he just some guy? Or, you know, I almost got the feeling that he knew more and was more powerful than he let on, that he had some sort of supernatural sense or power. Maybe he was, you know, the good, you know, whatever Mr. Dark is, maybe he was the good side of that and, you know, come as a warning to the town to look over things. And then, you know, and he ends up playing a big part in defeating the machinations of these evil creatures.
Perhaps he's from another town that this carnival has visited.
And he's claims to,
he's the lone survivor from a town that this carnival has decimated. Maybe. We don't know.
And he's always looking over his shoulder, isn't he? Mm-hmm. They talk about that. That's why I'm so interested to read the book. I want to know more about, what was his name? Tom Fury?
Yes.
More about, who he was and what his motivation was. I really think he was there to do exactly what he did and was to stop these creatures. And that's interesting. I want to know more about him.
Well, I guess you'll find out when you read the book.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Let me know about that.
I like that, though. He was kind of creepy at first, you know. But he ended up being, you know, a real good egg. You know, man.
So what else can we say about Something Wicked?
Definitely see it. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's definitely a good movie. It's one of those movies you should definitely include in your annual October viewing list. You know, it's something I think should be shown on TV every October, right along with, it's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. To me, this movie is Halloween, definitely, even though Halloween itself isn't implicitly, you know, included in the story. But they do mention, you know, in the very beginning of the movie, the field of pumpkins waiting to be carved, you know, and it is such a nostalgic film for me, such a nostalgic film. And that comes, of course, from it being a nostalgia, a story of nostalgia from Ray Bradbury. And I
think it definitely has that feel.
Yes. And I think Ray Bradbury's writing and his story and his script for the film, it all saves it. If it had been somebody else writing, I don't think this movie would have been a good movie. I think he really props it up with his style of storytelling. And it survived through countless revisions and, hey, let's make this more, you know, marketable, you know, meddling from the studio. And his writing and style really shows through. I love this movie so much. I'm glad to finally have it in my collection. And you can find it on DVD at Amazon.com for less than $10. So pick it up.
Yep. And it is not available on Netflix. I just checked.
Yeah, it's not. And it's not on Blu-ray either. So there is no restored. So when you watch it on DVD, it's going to be a little fuzzy and it's going to have all those little, you know, film pops and imperfections in the celluloid that they always, you know, painstakingly remove for Blu-ray releases. But I fully expect that within the next couple of years, if Disney proceeds with their plans to make a new film based on the book, that a Blu-ray restoration of the original film will probably come about. I look forward to seeing that if that happens. I just remembered, I haven't seen Something Wicked enough recently to remember everything, but I just remember the fantastic special effects and animatronics at the very, very end, where Mr. Dark is dying on the carousel, on the scary go round.
Oh, where he turns into a
bag of bones.
Jerky, basically.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's fantastic. Okay, well. Yes. Oh,
I
man.
I mean, for that, a Disney film, that was actually a little gruesome.
Yeah, that scene right there, you know, where they have the puppet corpse of Mr. Dark, you know, aging, and it seems that he's been gathering youthful energy, I guess, is how they live.
That could
and,
be it.
And
yeah.
All his years were undoing as the thing propelled him forward through time, through his own personal timeline, I guess. And they have this fantastic puppet just writhing in pain as it ages and ages and ages. And he ends up, and that little guy comes along and scoops him up and drags him off. That always made me wonder, maybe he took him somewhere safe where he could recover, you know. Maybe there would be a sequel or something, I don't know. That makes me wonder, maybe that's how they got the power to make themselves younger if they wished, was by taking the life force energy of the people in the town.
That is entirely possible. Taking the youthful energy from the people in town, storing it in the scary go-round, as we're now calling it, and then running it backwards to keep everyone young. That is entirely possible.
You know, and there's that scene where the witch whips her head around and reveals her true face to the kids, you know, when they're peeking at the scary go-round's use. Or no, it's something else, right? They're torturing Tom Fury or...
Right.
You know, something like that, I think. And then she whips around and she has this decrepit, old-looking face that's kind of glowing from within. So that leads me to believe that she's a lot older than she looks.
Good points.
Definitely.
Good points. Next time, The Monster Club goes head-to-head with two of the greatest werewolf movies ever made, An American Werewolf in London and The Howling. Thank you for tuning in. I am Jethel Silverwing.
And I'm Tuck.